So he put another parable before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the master of the house came and said to him, 'Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' So the servants said to him, 'Then do you want us to go and gather them?' But he said, 'No, lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the weeds along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.' Then he left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field.' He answered, 'The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the son of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sins and lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear."
We're going to be looking at this passage, and the reason we're looking at this passage is we're going through Matthew's Gospel at Glencroft, and I was speaking last week, and so I'm sharing with you what we looked at last week at Glencroft with a few changes. I love the parables. I don't know about you, I love stories, I love pictures, they make a lot of sense, and so I want to share this with you as well. Young Life produced something called the Toolkit a few years ago, and it's really a little help for everyone to sort of have in your back pocket. It's a bit like having a Swiss Army pocket knife, but you know, the Christian version, in your pocket. And it's got loads of things. So useful verses to share with people when you want to share the gospel. It's got a whole load of things on addressing people's questions, the reliability of the Bible. It's got a little chart, and it just shows you how we can really, really trust the Bible. It's got a whole section on prophecies, and you know, prophecies that have been fulfilled, and it shows you the prophecy and where they've been fulfilled. And so when you're looking for evidence to share with people, lots and lots of different things, challenging people's thinking. And then at the back section, it's got a whole different things on what other people believe. But just a very simple page. You haven't got to sort of read 10 volumes, you know, to find out everything. And the idea is this, is something you can keep in your back pocket. You meet someone at work and you say, "I don't know what they actually really believe." And you can just quickly look up and maybe use it to share verses. And I've got a whole number of these. I've got something like 25, 30 of them. If you'd like one, come and get one at the end. Sunday, so there's no charge. We give books away on a Sunday. If it was a Monday, you'd have to pay. But Sunday, you don't have to pay. Let's have a look at this parable of the wheat and the tares. And Jesus told a story, and he told a story about a man who'd got a field. And the first thing he did was he cleared the field, And then he went and planted the seed. And at night time, when everyone was asleep, an enemy came and planted weeds in the field. And you couldn't tell. In fact, you know, these weeds and the wheat looked very, very similar. It's only when they started to form and grow up and they realized there was a problem. So the servants go back to the master and they say to him, "Master, didn't you sow good seed in the field?" Basically, they were saying, "Did you go and buy the cheap, dodgy stuff? You know, you didn't buy the good quality grain." And the master says, "Well, I did. But an enemy has come and sown bad seed in this field. He's sown the weeds in." So the servant said, well, shall we go and pull all the weeds up?" And he said, no, don't do that. If you do that, you're going to end up damaging the good seed and the good crop. What we're going to do is we're going to wait till the harvest. And then when we've harvested everything, we'll divide it up. And we'll put the weeds in the fire. And then we'll collect the good crop and we'll put it in the barn. Now, there's a picture there of a wheat and a tare, and you can see there's not a lot of difference. The main difference is that the wheat does you some good. You know, it's got a harvest, and the tare hasn't really got a crop that feeds you. So this is the passage we're going to look at. And planting weeds in people's fields apparently still went on till quite recently in Southern Ireland. You know, Southern Ireland used to be quite feudal, and there were lots of little small farms, and people, you know, if they'd fallen out with their neighbour, they'd wait till their neighbour had sown their seed and then nip out at night time and sow a load of weeds in it. When I was a young boy, I went camping. In fact, I bought my tent in this room. Because years ago, they used to have the police auctions here. They were great. They used to sell everything that had been handed in over the whole year. And I used to spend my sort of boyhood getting my Christmas presents here. You get an umbrella for 15p. And 15p was the minimum bid. If it didn't sell for 15p, it got put with the next lot. I once bought an umbrella, a 50-gallon drum of glue, and a tractor tyre for 15p. I only took the umbrella away, I left everything else, and it just got put in the next auction. But I one time came along and I bought a tent. Well, I've bought a full camping kit, the stove, everything. Someone had handed it in. I bought it, and me and my friend went camping in Warwickshire, just south of Rugby. And we were probably about 11 years old, and this farmer let us have a corner of a field. And one day the farmer came to us and said, "Do you want to earn some money?" Well, he didn't have to tell us that twice. And so for the next 3 days, me and my friend, we formed a line of probably 12 people, and we walked up and down the fields of corn. And we all had a big bin bag, and every time we came across a wild oats, we had to pull them up. And the farmer said, "Don't just pull it out, you've got to pull the root up." And the reason was that he wanted to sell his corn as seed corn for the next year. And they, when they get the corn, they kind of examine it to see what percentage of weeds in. And if it's got too many weeds, you can't get the high price for seed corn for next year. And so we spent days just walking up and down pulling the weeds out, because, you know, weeds are a problem. And so I want us to look at this passage. In a sense, this passage answers a lot of really big questions, doesn't it? You know, you think about that question that the servants came and asked the master. Think about it. They said, you know, they're questioning the master, aren't they? They're saying, "Didn't you sow good seed?" Think about that question in our context. Why does God allow bad things to happen in this world? Do you want us to go and and pull up the weeds? People are saying, why isn't God dealing with the problems now? Why is God letting all the problems carry on? They're real questions, aren't they? And this passage answers them. So let's look at what we can do. And I've given this a title, Living for the King in a Hostile Environment. I don't know about you, but as a Christian today, are you finding things tough? Are you? Do you think things are getting worse or better, generally? Worse, I think. Should we be worried about it getting worse? Is it our commission to sort of deal with the worseness in the world? It's not the right phrase. I was educated in Odeby as well. They experimented in Odeby. We did ITA, 40-letter alphabet. Can never spell at all ever since. Great educators. Good teachers, anyway. So, I want us to look at this. And the first point is this. There are only two sorts of people in this world. We kind of, you know, lots of people think about good people or bad people or rich or poor people. I was quite amused a week yesterday. I looked up the service. I was interested in the words that they said, Harry and Meghan in the church. And they got to that phrase, you know, for richer, for poorer. For really rich or not quite so rich, you know. I don't think they're looking at poverty. You know, that's just my guess. But rich or poor, that's a big divide in the world, isn't it? White or black? Young or old? Write the old people off. It's only the young people that matter. But the Bible is clear about this. It says there's the wheat and the tares, the sheep and the goats, the lost and the saved. Look at what it says in verse 38. It says this, doesn't it? The field is the world, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom, and the weeds are the sons of the devil. This parable is really interesting because a lot of the parables, we have to work out what they mean. In this parable, Jesus tells us what it means. He told the story, and it was a story that really connected with people. As he told this story, I mean, we're not many really farming community people, but they would have known everything about this. And an enemy coming and sowing weeds would have just been, you know, yeah, we know about that. We heard about that. You know, that happened to Fred down the road. They related to this. But the Bible says there are only two sorts of people, lost and saved. When the Titanic ship went down and over 1,500 lives were lost, the shipping company in Liverpool put a sign up outside their gates. And as they were getting the news in, because there was a lot of confusion, some people got picked up by one ship, some by another, and it was really confusing who'd been saved, and some people were confirmed dead, some people weren't, and they put a sign up, and people go out and chalk names on, and they had saved and lost. And you're either on one side or the other. And the Bible's clear about this. God only sees two kinds of people in this world. Those who are saved and those who are lost. It's quite challenging, isn't it? Do you know, as you go around your life and, you know, maybe you see your neighbours and you work with people, are we viewing it in exactly the same way as God is? Is this person lost? Or are they saved? Rico Tice, many of you will know of him, his motto for life is this. And he says it to himself every time he looks in the mirror, which is a bit of a prompt. And his phrase is this: people without Jesus are going to hell. People without Jesus are going to hell. I think, it's something I've been trying to say to myself, I think if we were saying that to ourselves several times a day, doesn't it change things? Doesn't it change our perspective? You know, when we meet with our next door neighbour, or we meet with, you know, our work colleagues or relatives, this person is facing a lost eternity. What can I do to share the gospel with that person? Have we got God's view of how we see people? And then there's another challenge here, isn't there? And maybe there's some of us here, and maybe we're not saved. Or maybe you're not sure. The reality is, there's only two kinds of people. We're either on that saved list or on that lost list. And it's really important, isn't it, to be on the saved list. And if you're someone and you say, well, actually, you know, I've been coming along to church for a long time, I think I'm a Christian, but I'm not actually sure. My advice would be, why not make sure? You say, well, you know, I'm not sure whether I think I might have given my life to Jesus. Maybe I did. I'm just not sure. I would just go to the Lord today and say, Lord, you know, I'm not really sure, but today I want to make sure. And I want to put a stake in the ground, and I want to bring my life to you. I want to thank Jesus for dying on the cross for me. I want him to forgive me and cleanse me. I want him to be king of my life. And today I'm making sure. I'd really encourage you to do that if you're not sure. Well, the second point is, we have a real enemy. This passage teaches us that. Look at what Jesus says in verse 39. And he says, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The enemy is real. The devil is real. Satan is real. We have a real enemy. Our enemy, he's the enemy of our souls. He's the enemy of God. He's the enemy of all things that are good. And this is not heaven. You know, I think sometimes as Christians, we're trying to build heaven on earth. We're in a battleground. Heaven's going to be heaven. But this is a battleground, isn't it? And the most vicious, the most serious, and the most significant war is being fought out now, here. The most serious war is not happening out in Syria. And it's not going to happen potentially in Iran. The most serious war is for people's eternity, and there's a battle going on. And the danger is sometimes we as Christians, I put myself here, we kind of behave as though we're already in heaven. And, you know, rather than we're in a raging battle. It tells us that the enemy came at night time. He comes when we least expect it. He comes and he goes. He takes his chance when we're most vulnerable. It says that when the servants were sleeping, this enemy's going to attack us. And sometimes it's really easy. I remember just a few years ago, I did a week of beach missions. I was traveling back on my own, and it had been a really blessed week, but it had been a tough, hard week in many ways. I'm traveling back in the car on my own, and you know, I'm having the biggest battle with wrong thoughts in my mind. Because the enemy comes when we're most vulnerable. Satan is an interloper. He's a trespasser. He's the king of counterfeits. You know, the wheat and the tares, they look really similar. Satan creates counterfeits, doesn't he? Think about what goes on in this world. You know, in this world, you can buy most things, can't you? So, for instance, you can buy companionship. Some people will pay for sex, won't they? some people will pay to have someone come into that house on a daily basis and care for them. You can buy companionship, but you can't buy love. That's true, isn't it? You can buy entertainment. You know, everything's being thrown at us. You can buy the highest level of thrills, the greatest level of experiences. You can travel to all over the world. You can buy entertainment, but you can't buy joy, can you? Do you get that? You can buy sleep. You can go and pay for drugs. Or the NHS can pay for drugs. You can buy sleep, but you can't buy peace. You see, what the devil has to offer in this world, it's not the real thing, it's a counterfeit. Do you see that? You know? Companionship isn't love. Entertainment isn't joy. Sleep isn't peace. But when we come to Jesus and the Holy Spirit comes into us, what does the Bible say the fruit of the Spirit is? What are the first three fruits? Love, joy, and peace. The real things. And God gives them to us. They're just part of being a Christian, aren't they? Is that great? We should be saying hallelujah, shouldn't we? So how do we, what do we do? Three things. Number one, in Ephesians it tells us to put the whole armour of God on. We're in a battlefield. Don't go into the day without all the stuff that it talks about as our armour. Make sure you read the Bible every day, because we need it. Make sure you pray every day. We're in a battle. Secondly, go 100% with the wheat. Don't get isolated. Don't get cut out. Keep coming to church. Come along to the Bible study and prayer meetings. You know, a dose once a week isn't going to do it, because we're in a battle and we need our passion buckets and our truth buckets and our spirits filling up, because we're living in a battle, aren't we? And the third thing is, don't fret about the weeds or the enemy. God is in control, and we're going to see that as we go through this passage. So put the armour on. Go 100% with the weeds and don't fret about the things that God has got in control. Third thing, we're growing in a field of good and bad. Look at what it says in verse 30. It says there, doesn't it? Let both grow together until the harvest. Tells us the harvest is the end of the age. It's when Jesus returns. It's when heaven is ushered in. And until then, there's going to be good and bad growing in this world. We're not going to fix the bad. It's part of the world that we live in. 1 Peter tells us why God holds back his judgment. If it's an area you're struggling in, go to 1 Peter and read what it says. But it says, it gives us a picture of Noah's flood and how God held back from judging the world to create a place of safety and a place of salvation. And God holds back from judging the world so that people can come to know him. And it's good for, in one sense, it's good for us. It's part of his plan. And we can grow even in a world of good and bad. Does anyone know where that is? It's not in this country. It's actually in Holland. It's a place called Haarlem. And it's a place where a lady called Corrie ten Boom lived. Corrie ten Boom and her sister Betsy and their father, they ran a little watch shop. And the Second World War came along and they were Christians. And they started using their house to shelter Jews who were fleeing for safety. There were 140,000 Jews in Holland at the beginning of the Second World War, and 107,000 of them went to the prison camps, and only 5,000 of that 107 survived. 25,000 were sheltered by people, mainly Christians actually. We went around a museum in Holland. My wife and I went and visited. She had a special birthday 2 years ago, and I finally got round to organising her birthday treat this year, because we had a bad couple of years. but we queued for 2.5 hours in the rain to get in. They only let groups of 20 go round. And here's the sitting room. We sat round in the sitting room and listened to the story. And if you know anything about the story, you'll know that in Corrie's room, they built a hiding place. And this is the wardrobe, and you can see a little sliding panel in the bottom of that wardrobe. And 8 people slipped through that panel behind this false wall. And 8 people were kept safe when the Nazis raided it. And the Nazis raided it, and they arrested Corrie and her sister Betsy and her father. Her father died 2 weeks later in prison. And they took Betsy and Corrie to Ravensbrück concentration camp. Corrie ten Boom was released by clerical error just before the end of the war. Betsy died. And in that, that's a picture of the concentration camp. There were literally hundreds of thousands of people. Many of them went to the gas chamber. They were kept in dormitories. And Corrie and her sister smuggled in a little New Testament. And nightly, yeah, they held out the words of life to people who would have never even thought to stop to think about eternity in their busy lives. But in this concentration camp, they were desperate for truth. And tens of thousands of people, as far as we know, trusted the Lord in that concentration camp. Now, my point is this. You know, difficult times can be part of God's plan to put us in places where we can best grow and best be a blessing. I don't know what you're going through, but my guess is at least a third of the people here in this room are going through some tough times, at least a third. All kinds of pressures, maybe something in your family, maybe something in your workplace, maybe other things, maybe health issues, all kinds of things. And the point is this, that God can help us grow even in the difficult times. The good and the bad are growing together, but God is in control. And if you never read that book, The Life Story of Corrie ten Boom, I find it really helpful. I reread it probably every 3 or 4 years. I've bought 3 copies along. Love you to take one if you've not read it. It'd be a real blessing. It's an amazing story of just how God works through tough times. Again, it's Sunday, so no charge. If it was midweek, it'd be a fiver. So anyway, so we need to trust him because he will bring us through. And then fourthly, God plants us where he wants us to grow. Did you get that in that story? Who sowed the seed? The sower. Who's the sower? God? Whose field is it? God's field. He's planting the seed where he wants the seed to grow. God doesn't make mistakes. We do. God's grace is amazing, isn't it? You know, we can mess up 1,000 times. God is not only the God of the second chance, he's the God of the third chance, the fourth chance. Yeah, and maybe some of us here, we're feeling really messed up and we just feel, I've let God down, I've messed up in my life, and, you know, how could God possibly use me ever again? The reality is grace, he wipes it clean. And we could begin a fresh day today with him through his grace. Isn't that great? But are we willing to trust him that he's going to put us where he wants us? Can he plant you? Me and my wife, we've had a tough couple of years. In our business, we got cyber attacked. We got personally threatened. My movements got tracked in the evenings. We ended up, we ended up being ransomed for over £250,000. We ended up with the police driving past our house 8 times a day because they were concerned about our personal safety. And all kinds of things. And the GCHQ and others were having meetings, and we were in our business. We lost our computers for a total of 11 weeks. And trying to run a business these days without computers, and I know they did it for thousands of years without computers, but going back is quite hard. and other things going on. We had a tough couple of years. But God can bring you through. We can trust him. That where we are is where God has planted us. And having a view of saying, God, you've put me in this situation. I don't want to move out of it until I know that you're moving me out of it. Because I want to be where you've put me. And sometimes we can look over the hedge into the field that's next to us and say, look, the grass looks greener there. Look at that Christian family. Aren't they being blessed? Why aren't we being blessed in the same way? But God might be trusting you with stuff that he's not trusting them with. And he's going to give you the grace and the Holy Spirit to bring you through that. Can the sower really plant the seed where he wants to? And then fifthly, we need to be those who endure and leave the Lord to sort out the bad. Look at what it says in verse 28. He said, an enemy has done this. So the servant said to them, do you want us to go and gather them up? And he said, no, lest gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And then verse 41. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all the causes of sin and all lawbreakers. There is going to come a time when God is going to deal with every bit of wrong in this world. He really is. But he's going to do it. He doesn't call us to deal with the problems of this world. He calls us to be light. He calls us to be salt. Where we can influence things for good, we should. We should do everything we can. But our responsibility is to grow and bring in the harvest. That's our task. Our responsibility is to grow where he's planted us, to be spiritually fruitful, to live for Jesus, to share the gospel, to be lights in dark places, to spread the word. And we shouldn't ignore the suffering. If we can meet needs, Lord Shaftesbury, Cadbury's, lots of Christians, Corrie ten Boom, have met needs. But understand our big task. We're to be witnesses. We're to be ambassadors for Christ. And my challenge, I don't know about yours, is that sometimes, yeah, I can give up on it because I don't think it's doing anything. Do you ever feel like that? It's hard sharing the gospel. When I left a previous job, this is 2001, me and Rosie, we decided we'd spend some money and we booked a local hotel and we laid on a lunch for all the people I'd worked with, which is about 50 people. And we laid on a lunch and it's before I knew any friends in Gideon's. And the best sort of nice Bibles I could buy were about £7 each. So we spent £7 on these Bibles. And we bought everyone a Bible. We laid on the lunch. I just said a few words. Just thanked them for being great friends and great colleagues. And then I said, look, I'd really like to give you the most precious gift in the world, God's Word. And I gave these Bibles out. A couple of people refused them. But most people reluctantly took them. Really reluctantly, And I remember driving home, and I just I'm not sure that's done any good at all. Last Thursday, I met up with a guy called David. He lives in Lyme Regis, and he used to work with me in Colville at that place. And about 8 months ago, he rang me up and said, and I met up with him over the years. I remember just 3 years ago, I met up with him, and I've shared the gospel so many times with him, and he's just blank. You know, I share the gospel, and there's no response. And he's quite sort of upper middle class, you know, it's very proper. I always sort of feel not dressed properly when I'm with him, you know. Do you know that kind of... I feel very scruffy. And I remember 3 years ago, I met up with him, and I just said, David, I said, look, you know what I think on these Christian things? I said, and with what I believe, you're in trouble. I said, would you do me a really big favour? Jason, I'll do anything for you. I said, well, my big ask is this. Can I give you this book? And I gave him the Stranger on the Road to Emmaus book. And I said, for me, would you read it and let me know what you think of it? So I gave him the book, and he never mentioned it ever again. So just a few months ago, he rang me up, and we speak quite regularly on the phone. And he said, Jason, that book you gave me, he said, I don't know how to describe it, but it's changed my life. He said, something's happened inside me. He said, I see everything differently. He said, it's staggering. And he said, in fact, I'm even having private lessons from the vicar. So I said, oh, the Stranger book. So he said, no, not the Stranger, you know. I said, what book was it? He said, that book you gave me. Yeah, this is back in 2001. It sat on his bookshelf, and 3 years ago he started reading it. Isn't that incredible? Now, I'm just thinking of all, because I thought nothing had happened, you know, if I'd thought that was going to happen, how many more Bibles would I have given out since 2001? And I could tell you some other story. I think we often don't do much because we don't think it's having an impact. But we have a great God, don't we? Haven't we got a great God? And God says that his word will not return to him void. And so we're called to live for him. Let the Lord sort out the bad and live for Jesus. Our focus needs to be on the main thing. And sixthly, tares can become wheat. Just told you the story, my friend David. Come along to the mission on Sunday night, the Real Lives Week, and hear about Luke's old boss, brought up on one of Leicester's big council estates. And when I first met Mark, he's living with a lady, but she wasn't his wife, and he's lived with a number of ladies. And into all kinds of things, all that this world has to offer. And, you know, not really what we call a nice person. And he started coming along to some restaurant meals we ran at Glencroft, and came along to some other things. And he read books, and he wasn't a reader. It took him quite a while, and we spent time with him, and he came to Christ. In fact, he was a Christian for nearly 2 years before he even came to church, because Sunday was the day he spent with the lady he lived with. And then they came on a marriage course, they got married, and they started coming along to church, and she was really anti, and he stopped, and it was really, he didn't think the relationship would last the marriage, and amazingly, she came to faith. And now his two teenage daughters have come to faith. And his brother, who mocked him for becoming a Christian, his brother's son had a baby, was about to have a baby, and they said, the baby's going to die, it won't last. The baby was born, and they said, the baby's going to die, it won't last a week. And my friend Mark said, well, we've got our church praying. And he said, look, I tell you what, if the baby lives for 2 weeks, I'll go to church. The baby's still living. And he went to church. And he's become a Christian. His wife's become a Christian. Now Mark's dad's become a Christian. And do you know, God works in people's minds. And weeds can become wheat. It's not implicit in this passage, but we know it from the rest of the Bible, don't we? Tares can become wheat. Isn't that amazing? Be just saying, how can we share the gospel? Because this is what matters. Lost people without Jesus are going to hell. And then lastly, the harvest is everything. Verse 30 and verse 39. Look at what it says. Let both grow together until the harvest. Until the harvest. And verse 39. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age. Until the harvest. Serious words. Saved or lost, only two kinds of people. Can I ask you, where are you? If you had to say today which list you would be on, could you honestly, clearly, surely say, do you know I'm on that saved list? I really am. And then when we think about other people, we've all got people, aren't we, who are not on that saved list. We've got friends and relatives and people. Are we praying for them? Are we giving them a Bible? Are we inviting them to things? Are we sharing Jesus with them? Wouldn't it be tragic? Yet we get to the end of the age and if people looked at us and they're on the other side and they said, well, why didn't you tell me? You knew everything. You'd tell me. Until the harvest. I heard this, a definition of a worldly person. It's in a book written by William MacDonald called Worlds Apart. It's a very helpful book. And it says this, a worldly person is one whose plans all end at the grave. A worldly person is one whose plans all end at the grave. That's very challenging, isn't it? Do my plans go beyond the grave? Do they go beyond the... Are we planning? Are we dreaming of things that are for eternity? Things that matter? Things that last? Or are all my dreams? And all my goals? And all your dreams? And all, do they all just end? Are we going to have a nice house, a good job? You know, do they end at the grave or do they go beyond the grave? The harvest is everything. What are we living for? There's only two sorts of people. We've got a real enemy, haven't we? We're growing in a field of good or bad. God plants us where we want to grow. Endure and leave the Lord to sort out the bad. Tares can become wheat. And the harvest is everything.